Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, an analyst speaks with us about the U.S. B-52 bomber flight over South Korea. Four-way talks begin on bringing peace to Afghanistan. Our cyber guru looks at security in the web world in 2016.
We have heard consistently that IT people are constantly asking for more money, more attention, and the CEOs just haven't been paying attention. Well, they're paying attention now.
And singer Janet Jackson responds to rumors she is suffering from cancer. It's here on The Voice of America. A long-range U.S. B-52 bomber flew over South Korea Sunday in an apparent response to North Korea over its latest nuclear weapons test. We asked Korea expert Troy Stangoroni of the Korea Economic Institute of America if the B-52 flyover was the right thing for the U.S. to do.
I think this is an appropriate response. What we've done is we've essentially taken and demonstrated to North Korea that we do remain committed to the defense of both South Korea and Japan, and that we have the means with which to take and defend them should North Korea decide to utilize its growing nuclear program for an attempt to take and either cause provocations on the peninsula or some other type of disruption to either South Korea or Japan.
Sunday's flight of the B-52 came hours after North Korean leader Kim Jong-un defended last Wednesday's test of an alleged hydrogen bomb as a demonstration of self-defense against U.S.-led imperialists. Zangaroni's read on Kim's rhetoric.
It tends to be something that demonstrates perhaps what they need internally for domestic consumption, but doesn't reflect necessarily the situation on the ground. We all know that the greatest danger of a nuclear conflict taking place is from North Korea's own nuclear program. If you look at the United States, South Korea, and Japan, they've all taken and sought to engage the North in some way over the past years. But despite efforts to take and reach out to discuss the nuclear program, South Korea's efforts through its Trust Politique program to build greater economic and cultural ties, Japan's efforts through the Abe administration over the last couple of years to try and resolve the abductee issue with North Korea. In all these situations, North Korea has both turned its back on these efforts and continued to take and push this program forward. So I think the real threat, as we all understand, is North Korea's own nuclear program and not the United States or South Korea.
North Korea's nuclear tests angered traditional ally China and set off a firestorm of criticism in capitals across much of the world. Time for a look at what's going on the web today, and joining me with the details is social media reporter Olin Akisholu. Welcome, Olin.
Hi, Susan. This weekend, there were two trends that started on social media related to North Korea. The first was K-pop. It stands for Korean pop, and it's a type of music popular in South Korea. After North Korea's latest nuclear test, South Korea announced it would resume broadcasting propaganda messages across the border, and that includes broadcasting some of its K-pop music. So a lot of people on social media think it's a clever idea that actually shares some of South Korea's culture with their northern neighbor. And North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, he also had a birthday last week, so a lot of people joked that South Korea was turning up the music and DJing for his birthday party. The other trend is some comments that Republican candidate Donald Trump made about North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. He calls the dictator's power incredible. And some people don't really like how Trump has praised leaders like Russian President Vladimir Putin and now Kim Jong-un, and they were alarmed at his remarks, and others were not as surprised because Trump has already said a lot of outlandish things so far in this election.
Well, what else is trending?
The biggest trending topic on social media right now is David Bowie. Last night, news outlets began reporting the 69-year-old singer had died from cancer, and a lot of people are tweeting, "Rest in peace, David Bowie," and other kinds of tributes to the singer. People are also sharing some of Bowie's memorable quotes and songs from his latest album, Black Star, which was released just 2 days before his death. But a lot of people definitely feel the loss. According to Twitter trends, his name has already been used more than 1.5 million times in tweets in the past 24 hours.
And we'll have more on that story a little later on. Well, thanks, Olin.
You bet, Susan.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
You may have heard that dying people have some rather amazing dreams or visions in the final weeks and days of their lives. A new study by researchers at Canisius College in Buffalo, New York, suggests that these end-of-life dreams are an important and comforting part of the dying process that improve quality of life for those about to die. While some in the medical community consider these dreams and visions to be no more than delusions or hallucinations, the researchers found that to someone dying, they're quite realistic and often very meaningful. The researchers found that the most common and most comforting theme of these visions and dreams were those of deceased family and friends. The study also showed that these dreams and visions became more frequent the closer a person came to death. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Officials from Afghanistan, Pakistan, the United States, and China today held talks in Islamabad in a bid to kickstart peace talks between Kabul and the Taliban to end nearly 15 years of fighting. A U.S. spokesman said the aim is to coordinate a quadrilateral effort to set conditions for peace in Afghanistan. The special representative to Afghanistan and Pakistan, Richard Olson, heads the U.S. delegation. The Islamist insurgent group was not invited to this round, and it comes amid some battlefield gains by the Taliban in the past year, with a brief capture of the northern city of Kunduz and seizure of territory in southern Helmand province. Nazif Sharani, a native Afghan, has just returned from the South Asian country. The Indiana University professor tells VOA's Victor Beatty most Afghans hold out little hope of any breakthrough. In this case, he says, Pakistan has set some preconditions.
Some of them are legitimate, like recognize the Durand Line and some water issues with rivers. There's a whole bunch of their concerns, not so much what Taliban want, but what they want. So we'll see, I mean, if they are going to lay out what their demands are. And I think the Kabul regime has to abide by some of the legitimate concerns like the Durand Line. It has to be accepted as an international border. And that is a very big concern of Pakistanis and always has been a major issue since the beginning of the conflict with Russia and the communists and so forth. So we'll see. I mean, if it results at least in outlining what the Pakistani demands are and what the Afghans are willing to do or not willing to do, and what China and the United States can do to bring them closer to negotiation, and of course also the fact that the bride is not going to be there and the Taliban are not invited, they are not part of the negotiations. At some point, I think they have to bring them into the picture as well.
The Taliban in a statement said that it wanted to maintain good relations with other countries, even as it wages war against what it called American occupation, but did not mention the peace talks. At what point will the Taliban be asked to take part?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is in the last couple of weeks, there has been noises out of Kabul that some elements of Taliban have been indicating that they are willing to talk directly with the Afghans.
On Sunday, the Afghan security forces wrested control of a northern district bordering Tajikistan from the Taliban. But overall, the Taliban seems to be gaining ground.
There is no doubt about that. I think in Badakhshan, the northeastern province, they have gained quite a lot of ground. And this district that you referred to, Darqad in Takhar, is right on the border. And there are also some districts in Faryab province in the northwest that are also threatened by Taliban and their presence. They are still in Kunduz, and around Kunduz, the transplanted Pashtuns from the south who have been there are essentially the Taliban and Taliban supporters, and the government has not been willing to directly attack them. So that there are these problems in the north, yes, and the threat to Central Asian republics and to Russia and eventually China are all there in a much larger scale than they have ever been.
Talks with the Taliban have been on hold since July when they collapsed after just one meeting following Pakistan's announcement that longtime Taliban leader Mullah Muhammad Omar had been dead for more than 2 years. A subsequent power struggle within the Taliban has raised questions about who would represent the insurgents if the talks with Kabul are revived. Coming up on International Edition, want some more cyber scares? And Janet Jackson says no to health rumors. There's little doubt that 2015 will not be remembered fondly by cybersecurity professionals, with millions of successful hacking attacks and unaccounted documents breached or stolen. It seemed at times that nothing could be done to stop the assault on the globe's computer systems. So is 2016 doomed to just more of the same, or might help be on the way? Well, my buddy International Edition's Doug Bernard covers cyber for us and is joining us now here in the studio. Welcome, Doug.
Do I bring good news or bad news?
I'm hoping it's good news because we talk so many times about unhappy things. I'm just hoping this time you were telling me there's a rainbow in the horizon.
Well, first, let's take a look back at 2015.
Okay.
It really was a wretched year in terms of cybersecurity. It was just filled with stories of massive-scale hacking attacks, data theft, all kinds of intrusions, and at times it really almost seemed like the people who are guarding our computer systems just weren't able to protect the system. So it was a discouraging year, but, you know, that was last year. We're moving on to a new year now.
Well, you've written a story, actually, saying there might be reason for optimism. Why?
I did. So there are several reasons. First, I think just the scale of last year's intrusions and data breaches has got the attention of government, leading government officials, and the people in charge at corporations. We have heard consistently that IT people are constantly asking for more money, more attention, and the CEOs just haven't been paying attention. Well, they're paying attention now, and that, I think, is bodes well for cybersecurity. But that, I think, is really just one factor of several things that are coming down the line.
For instance?
Well, for instance, I think this year we're going to see much more AI, or what they call machine learning. AI stands for artificial intelligence. Basically, the cybersecurity people are figuring out ways to design systems that aren't waiting for humans to detect an attack and then respond to it. These systems are so smart, they're actually learning from attacks and increasingly being able to predict attacks that haven't even happened yet so they can bolster up security where they need to. So I think that's an interesting trend that we're definitely going to see more of in 2016.
This is so science fiction-like, the
it
way
does
these
seem
machines
so
are taking over, you know?
Well, it does seem so, but, you know, when you think about the amount of hacking that's going on right now at this point, I would guarantee you right now somebody's trying to gain access to our website. Somebody's trying to gain access to millions and millions of websites right now as we speak. So what people have decided or realized, I think, is there just aren't enough people to defend against all these hackers. But if you let the machines do it, they never sleep, they never take a break or a weekend, you know, you're taking a step above the human hacker.
I don't know why I like you so much, Doug, because every time you come in here, you scare me every single time. And well, I hate to ask you this next question because I know what you're going to say.
Yes.
You're going to say change your password. So I'm going to ask it anyway. What can individuals do to try to save themselves, protect themselves?
Change your password.
I knew it.
don't use the same password between various programs and systems. And I think perhaps the most important thing, actually, we've said it before, if you get an email or an attachment that you didn't ask for, don't open it. Delete it. Don't be curious. Don't be fooled by a message that says, hey, thought you might like to see this, when you don't know really who it's from. Just be on guard. Don't be paranoid, but, you know, be watchful and aware that people are trying to get at you.
Oh, and I wanted to tell you about my mom.
Yeah.
This was a phone call, not an email, but she gets emails as well. She's very elderly. And she got this phone call, and it was on her answer machine. It said, this is the Internal Revenue Service, and you have to call us right away and give us your secret information because we're suing you, and if you don't call right away and answer our questions, you're going to be in jail. And it's scary.
Yes, it is scary. And I'll tell you something else. Another trend that I think we're going to see in 2016 very quickly is an increase in ransomware. We saw a lot of it in 2015. It's that same kind of pitch. Somebody scares you into clicking on something or doing that. And what they do is they seize control of your computer. They lock you out. And they say, we're not going to give you your computer back with all of your photos and music and everything until you pay us, I don't know, $100 or something. So again, it's really important. You know, again, don't be scared. Don't be curious. But if something seems fishy, just
don't fall for it.
Don't fall for it. Delete it.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Singer Janet Jackson is denying reports that she had to cancel some dates on her Unbreakable tour because she had throat cancer. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the story and Jackson's latest album.
Back in October, late October, she announced that she had to cancel or postpone. She was postponing dates in Kansas City and in St. Louis. And then we started to hear some talk about her having some problems with her voice. And this is not unusual. A lot of artists, when they go out on tour, overextend themselves, and then they end up with injuries to their vocal cords. So the first assumption was that's what was going on. But then all of a sudden, we started to hear rumors that perhaps she was suffering or had been diagnosed with throat cancer. And that caused, obviously, a lot of panic among Janet Jackson fans and then a lot of discussion about why she had not come forward with this information. Now, we do know that Janet is a very private person. It's very rare to hear anything about personal about Janet. I mean, she's very open when it comes to her music, her inspiration, but her health, her family, her marriage, we know nothing about. But I guess the rumors had gotten so bad that she had to come out and say that no, she is not suffering from throat cancer. And it had gotten so bad that there were people saying that, you know, her parents were having issues or were freaked out because they didn't want to lose another child. I mean, this rumor just it got its legs and it took off.
Well, now, Janet didn't help things by being somewhat cryptic in her first response. She put out a video of one of her songs as her statement. And it's, you know, we're talking about The Great Forever. Wait a minute. Great Forever, that's like eternity.
Right,
like heaven.
Yeah, what does that mean? Yeah, that's true. And again, I think that goes sort of toward how Janet Jackson has always been. She's always been kind of cryptic, and she always takes her time in terms of coming out and saying what it is that she really means. And maybe, and this is just speculation on my part, maybe they were not sure of what exactly was going on. And so rather than deny it before you can confirm it, if you know what I mean, she said, let me just hold off. Now, in her statement, she said that the doctors have given her permission to move forward with her European tour dates and that she will come back around and play the cities that she couldn't get to here in the States. So it looks like things are moving forward, which is very good for her because the album wasn't doing well. The songs weren't charting as well. And we do know nowadays in 2016, you make your money on the tour. And so she stood to lose a lot of money had this tour been canceled. Not to say that if the rumors were true, that would matter as much, but, you know, it matters.
All right. Well, what do you think? Do you have an opinion about Janet Jackson's tour, about her health, about her music? Let us know. You can tweet to Shauna. She is at VOA Lady DJ. You can also log on to our website. That's voanews.com.
Don't have time to sleep, a wicked dream, so think outside the box, my baby. Come on. Show me how much you are missing me. I'll read between the lines and dash your hope and rain. Yeah.
And some sad news from the world of music. British rock music legend David Bowie has died. On Friday, the iconic musician turned 69 and released Black Star, his 25th album. His Facebook and Twitter accounts say he died peacefully Sunday, surrounded by his family after a courageous 18-month battle with cancer. Bowie was known for his gender-bending dress and for his refusal to be pigeonholed in any one musical genre, experimenting with glam rock, hard rock, dance, pop, soul, and punk. He was to be honored with a concert at Carnegie Hall in March and was the author of a musical, Lazarus. He is survived by his wife, the model Iman, and two children. David Bowie died at the age of 69. She could spit in the eyes of fools as they ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us. Now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Around the world, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Vietnam, Syria, Russia, Iran, and other countries, journalists are under siege and freedom of expression is under threat. The Committee to Protect Journalists reports that in 2014, more than 60 journalists were killed, hundreds imprisoned, and dozens remain missing. Reporters Without Borders notes that governmental attempts to silence journalists include censorship, harassment, restrictive NGO laws, and public threats by political leaders. Speaking at Columbia University in New York, U.S. Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs Richard Stengel, himself a former journalist, described freedom of expression as a foundational human right. Challenges to that freedom, he said, are now deeper and more profound than at any time in decades. He described three: the physical dangers journalists confront in conflict zones and elsewhere, the shrinking space for free expression in countries with autocratic leadership, and the rise of disinformation. In the past, journalists trying to expose the truth were given a kind of safe pass, said Undersecretary Stengel. Now they are targets of regimes and of terrorists like ISIL. As such, supporting freedom of the press is a critical element of U.S. foreign policy. It is one of the issues that our diplomats around the world regularly address in bilateral talks with governments. One initiative provides trainings to journalists on physical and digital security and psychosocial care throughout the world. And the U.S. has invested over $100 million in internet freedom programs to provide tools and trainings to thousands of vulnerable civil society and independent journalists around the world. Finally, in response to the rise of disinformation from terrorist groups or autocratic regimes, the U.S. is being proactive, said Undersecretary Stengel, in claiming the space for truth-telling by pushing back on propaganda and falsehood with fact-based messages, as well as by supporting independent media around the world with financial, technical, and logistical support. And why? Because, as President Barack Obama has said, journalists give all of us as citizens the chance to know the truth about our countries, ourselves, our governments. That makes us better. It makes us stronger.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.